Blog Talk Radio.
Kneel before Zod.
Welcome to the war room. We got Dez, Kim, Jimmy, PJ, B. Austin, the hot block commander.
Here. How you want to end a 1 or 2 hour show and keep the brain running with the premise to talk sports on a national level? Both with the topic, sort of like the rubber. When it's game time, they like the Fab Five during prime time. Sports conglomerates speak their minds a little bit. So sports medicine and sports veterans and greats. The 4 for 26, so the war in Kuwait. It's the war room with five knights at the round table. Five silly guys, diversified and educated.
What's good, War Room Nation? Welcome back to the best roundtable in sports. You are once again live in the War Room, brought to you by War Room Sports, the company that's revolutionizing the revolution in sports media. I'm Devin McMillan. I'm at the table with B. Austin, Jimmy Williams, Kill Bayon, and Paul Johnson. We got a great show for you today. March Madness is in full swing. The heat streak is over. Tiger Woods is back to number one, and War Room Sports is still on the rise. Join us in the JW Philly Realty chat room right now at blogtalkradio.com/the War Room or join us on Facebook or Twitter at War Room Sports to join the conversation. Call us directly when we open up the Digital Extreme Tech Hotline at 323-410-0012. Before we get started, we'd like to shout out the team. The future of Sports Talk Radio has arrived, so be sure to listen to Roy and Chris on the Broad Street Line every Tuesday at 6 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio. Also, check out Brandon and Daniel, Sports Trap Radio, on Saturdays at 10 a.m. Eastern Time at ueradiolive.com. But don't worry, if you can't catch them live, you can hear and watch all of our partner shows at warroomsports.blogspot.com. In addition, don't forget to catch us in syndication 3 times on Fridays on newvibradio.com. That's 7 a.m., 1 p.m., and 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And on Sundays and Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on FatsRadio.com, and we'll probably have another big announcement for you guys in the coming weeks and some more syndication, but we'll keep you abreast of all that news. But enough of the official particulars. Yo, Jim, who's having a birthday?
It's my birthday, yay!
What's up, people?
Yo, through the lights, cameras, and action, glamour, glitters, and gold, we unfold the scroll. Y'all know what it is.
Yeah, can't see the stain, feed the globe. But we'll be deceased, but in the beast of rise, like, no, man, yo, the birthdays are brought to you by DirecTV. If you like a better TV experience than cable has to offer, and that includes the NFL Sunday Ticket, the NFL will be back before you know it, because, you know, it seems like there is no offseason anymore. But anyway, go to our website, warroomsports.com, click on the DirecTV logo, and you can get a, you know, a hookup rate, as we give you the hookup, and that's what you want. The birthdays, let's start with this birthday. I want to hear what you gentlemen have to say about this one. One Wesley LaVon Person, who turns 42.
It's my birthday, yay!
Yo.
Wesley Person.
I must be old, yo, because I don't think of Wesley Person as being 42. Like, I still think
of
him
as... he just turned 42, so... But go ahead, I'll get your point.
I think of him as, like, Chuck Person's little brother. A young boy, man, like, this must mean I'm getting old or something.
Yeah, man, he's up there, 42 years old, you know. He ain't said nothing about his game, though, just the fact that you getting old. What do you think about Wesley Person? What do you think of pretty well about him as a player?
He was a good shooter. He was an okay player. Didn't do much on D. Couldn't do much off the bounce, but he could shoot the three. I mean, if you're Chuck Person, you're the rifleman's brother, you better at least be a pistolier.
Yeah. I mean, he had a pedestrian career, averaged about 11 points, couple of rebounds, couple of assists. But, what Austin said is the truth, though. When you think of Wesley Person, when you hear his name, you just think of him being the rifleman's little brother. So I guess he was in the league, had a nice long career in the league. So I'm pretty sure where he's from and his family, they think a little, you know, they think higher of him than we do. But as far as I'm concerned,
you know,
Chuck's
you know
little
that,
brother, man. That's Brandy.
None of us know this to be fact, but you can only imagine that his brother cast a shadow over him like his whole life. And both of them have been retired. He hasn't been in the league, and that's still what we remember him as. So it's like his brother forever will cast a shadow over him.
He like Ray J. I mean, you know.
He's no, Ray J. Ray J. Step out.
No.
Ray J. At this point,
Wesley stepped out into the league. 11 points in the league, a long career. That's his equivalent of a Kim Tate, but, you know, he's still Brandy, bro.
No,
I don't know about that, though.
I'm not
I
as
think,
impressed with a
point,
Kim
Tate. I'm
popular more impressed with a Kim Tate.
At this point, he might be more popular, yo. But even beyond that, though, how many years was Chuck in the league? Does anybody know offhand?
Chuck Person?
Probably like 13. I'll guesstimate at 13, 14.
Less than Wesley.
Think so?
Yeah.
Nah.
Wesley was in the league longer than Chuck, wasn't he?
He
Chuck
might
did,
have been
Chuck
because
did,
Chuck has
Chuck
some injuries
so
and
more.
Stuff. And let's see. Chuck was in the league for...
My bad, Wesley, man. We should be talking about you, but...
Chuck was in the league for 13 years. It
okay,
might have been maybe 11. Like 15.
It's not bad, though. I mean, it's still not bad. 11-year career is 11-year career. It is what it is. Doc Bang, what do you have to say about him?
Yeah, my thoughts on Wesley Person, I think he was a great shooter. But like you said, he had a pedestrian NBA career. But all he could do is shoot. Never really went to the basket or worked on his handle or, you know, he was lanky enough to be a good defender. But I guess he said, I'll just chill. So that's about it.
He said, I'll just chill.
Here's one thing. If you're a shooter like that, they'll always find a job for you. I mean, he had a career that lasted more than a decade with only being able to shoot. So shout out to him for that anyway. Enough about him on his birthday. Let's move on to the next birthday. This birthday is Jason Calvin Garrett, who turns 47.
It's my birthday. Yay!
I'm going to start with Doc Bay. I want to hear what you have to say about Jason Garrett.
Well, you know, this is a process. You know, we'll take it one day at a time with our team. Everything is a process. We're going to look at the particulars of the situation and then move forward from there. Here they call him Red Jesus in Cowboy Land. And he's a very cerebral, sometimes too smart for his own good coach. I guess he could be a good head coach if you take away the play calling duties. I mean, Romo and us have put up a lot of stats under him, but in the red zone, we have struggles. And in our best season, him and Tony Sperano were kind of splitting the play calling. So he's very smart, so you want to keep him around, but you really have to find out, is he a head coach? Is he a coordinator? What is he? I mean, maybe he should just be a smart guy up in the GM, in the GM's box or something. Maybe he's a good GM. There you go.
So you're not, basically, you're not sold on him as being the head coach in this capacity is what you're saying.
No. I mean, I know Jerry stripped the play calling from him, so this year we'll see what happens. But I know with him calling plays and being a head coach, like, he lost about four games for us within the last two, three seasons.
He kind of seemed like he was gifted that job, you know, maybe handpicked by Jerry a little bit, because he basically knew that he had a coach in there where he could control everything. I guess the only bone he threw him was the play calling. Now, like Kill said, he's, you know, there's rumors that he's taking that away from him. So, you know, what's left? What decisions are left for him to make as the head coach of the team?
Yeah, I'm listening to Kill, and he really didn't say what he does well. I'm thankful.
He designs a good draw play.
A good draw? Okay, good draw.
They run that about 65 times per game.
And do you think that's because when in his playing days, that's what he did well, hand the ball off? Or
no, he held a clipboard real well. What are you talking about?
Oh, got you. Clipboard holding.
Yeah, he's
nice with the clipboard.
I mean, those
I'm
are usually the guys who make good coaches, though. You know, the backup
who gets
to watch the game.
I'm thankful for him because as long as he's the head coach, I feel as though my lowly Eagles have an opportunity to regain some level of soaring. So that's what
really?
I think of his coaching. No, not really. But it's
Eagles got their own. They got their own mix of problems. I could be coaching the Cowboys and it'll be better than the Eagles. So.
Yeah,
I mean, in terms of Jason Garrett, anytime I hear his name mentioned in football circles, they talk about how smart of a guy he is. But just because you're a smart guy doesn't mean it translates into being a head coach. I think Kill hit it on the head. They just have to find out, you know, how to put him in the best place to be successful, and I don't think they figured that out yet, whether that is being just a coordinator, whether that's, you know, personnel decisions. So that's what they have to figure out, and that's up to Jerry Jones to figure out, so he'll probably screw it up. Anyway, let's move on to the next birthday. The next birthday is one Byron Anthem Scott with his handsome. He turns 52.
My birthday, yay!
Byron Scott.
Byron Scott, man, you know, I remember Byron Scott from the Showtime Lakers days. He was kind of the bridge from the Showtime Lakers to the next generation of Lakers. Because if I'm not mistaken, wasn't Byron Scott still around, like, when Kobe and Shaq first showed up?
They brought him back. They
he was like the one of the resident old heads on the team when those
guys first
showed up. But I remember about Byron Scott, when he came in the league, he was pretty. He was a pretty athletic two guard. So when Magic get everybody out on that break, he used to give it to Byron Scott, and Byron Scott used to bam that thing a little bit. You know,
when I think of Byron Scott as a Lakers fan, I think of one particular play when Magic was coming down the floor, and he was staring left the whole time at Worthy, and I don't know how he saw Byron Scott but threw it, and then Byron Scott like punched on everybody. That one play always comes to mind.
And
I think about him as a head coach, and you know how he seemed to have so much promise. But you know, I guess you get put in a bad situation because wasn't LeBron supposed to come to Cleveland when he came as the coach? And it was supposed to be, you know.
Yo, they bamboozled
Jimmy,
I'm telling you,
what Jimmy just said, man, you hit the nail on the head, man. It doesn't matter how great you are as a coach, if your talent is garbage, you're going to be garbage. Doc Rivers was like a week away from being fired in Boston. Then he gets Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen, you know, he gets all those guys in one place, and all of a sudden Doc Rivers is a genius. You know what I'm saying?
But this is why I kind of get, like, when we have these debates and people always knock Phil Jackson for having talent, and then they run off a list of their favorite coaches, and all of them have had talent. And I said, you know, you want to mention, you know what I'm saying, like, all these coaches, but great coaches have great players and vice versa. But I wonder, when I think about that, if they told him, listen, LeBron is gone for good, would he be able to sign that deal?
They thought it was a change.
He was a highly sought after coach.
I think it was a lot of people in Cleveland just thinking, like, no, there's no way LeBron's going to spurn, you know, what's essentially his hometown. No way he's leaving. And then, you know, you bring in a coach that you think can relate to him. You know, LeBron probably meets him a couple of times and then says, FOH, I had this plan since draft day, so, you know, got it.
He got it bad, man. You know what I mean? The words of Usher, he got it bad. There's no way he would have ever have signed that deal.
Yeah, so my thoughts on Byron Scott, I think, I mean, he's a good coach. I mean, obviously he led those Nets teams to back-to-back finals, and he's underrated for that. Cleveland sucks, so that's just too bad. I do remember that play where he punched on the whole team. I think it was the Phoenix Suns when Magic was looking the opposite way, and he just punched on everybody.
You know exactly what I'm talking about, yo.
Yep, and I also remember where Jordan – in the finals, shut him down for, like, three games. Like, it was some stat. This was after they made the switch in game two to put Pippen on Magic and put Jordan on Byron Scott. Pippen, you know, did his best against Magic, and then Jordan held Byron Scott scoreless for something like a game and a half or two games or two and a half games, something like that. And that helped
him win the show. As if he held a great scorer. He helped.
Like
Byron
he did that
Scott
to Clyde score. Or somebody.
I'm just saying. Scott averaged like 18 sometimes. I mean, he was a catalyst, especially on that team without Kareem. So it was like Devox and Magic and was Worthy still there? Yeah, Worthy was still there. But he was on a decline. So, you know, you expected Byron Scott to at least put in about 15 a game. So that's all. So there we go.
I got one question for you, though. That play where he dumped on Phoenix, yo, how did Magic see him, yo? Because he ain't looked that side the whole play, yo.
Peripheral
anyway. Magic, man. That's why his name was Magic.
That's why when people say LeBron passes like Magic, nobody passes like Magic. Like, the stuff Magic did was Magic. You know what I'm saying?
Yo, and here's the thing, though. People say that just to give you an idea that LeBron's a great passer. You know what I mean? Now, we all know that he doesn't pass like Magic, because I still don't know how.
No human being can do that.
But it was the craziest pass. I know Austin wants to say something smart because he has to take a shot. So Austin, go ahead. What you got to say?
Take a shot at who? Byron Scott. I thought Byron Scott was nice as both a player and a coach. I always appreciated Byron Scott.
Now, are we waiting for the magic shot?
I know. I'm waiting for the shot at magic somehow.
Magic, all right.
Well, let's move on then, man. So, you know, since you ain't got nothing smart to say, let's move on.
Hey, real quick. Y'all remember when Byron Scott went to the Pacers and then got real diesel for no reason? Like, he put on like 20 pounds of muscle all in his biceps.
Steroids.
But anyway,
remember,
the last birthday, this gentleman has a long name. It's Richard Francis Dennis Barry III.
Here?
Yo, what's that? Why do people have like two middle names, yo? I don't know if none of y'all got two middle names, but yo, that's drawing. Anyway, Richard Francis Dennis Barry III, a.k.a. Rick Barry, turned 69.
My birthday, yay!
Yeah.
I'll just be very brief. I think of Rick Barry, I think of the foul shot, the underhanded foul shot. Dev.
I got two nicknames. One nickname, Big Daddy, but that's for the ladies. Rick Barry, man, great player. But for the past decade or two, really, I just think about his spawns. I mean, he had like a league full of sons. And, you know, they weren't bad players. They both went on to broadcasting careers. Got a little tired of John Barry sometimes because the way he speaks as a broadcaster, it would make you think, had you never seen him before, that he was this great player. And, you know, I mean, I know you don't have to be that to go into a career broadcasting, but sometimes when you know a dude is a little bit fraudulent, it kind of bothers you, but...
They better never let me get in broadcasting because I'm talking Kirk Chop Greasy about everybody. I know, but we weren't
in the league, so you know it's still different. I mean, I know a lot of people out there were like, "Well, y'all never played in the league," but at the same time, he did, and we got to see him. And some of the criticism that he has, like, "Come on, dude, like, really?" Like the dude you're criticizing would probably put him
hold on,
in the top.
Hold on, which man are you talking about, Beth?
John Barry.
Talk about John.
Well, we're talking about Rick Barry, though, yo.
No, but I was talking about, you know, what I think about is his...
I know. I get you. I just thought about it, though, like...
Man, yeah. I wasn't around for the Rick Barry era. I ain't had much to say.
This one, so. Slander his son.
I had to slander his son.
All right, Doc Beck.
Yeah, I think, when I think of him, I think of, Rick Barry. I think he's one of the most underrated NBA players of all time. Like, what he did scoring, he scored with the best of them. Rebound, one of the best rebounders for his position, one of the best passers at his position, won a chip, and it's like I feel like he gets forgotten about. And, he was a beast. Then he had four sons that were able to play NBA level. I mean, four sons that played high D1. Scooter Barry was on that Kansas team that won the chip with Danny Manny. You know, he had some tryouts in the NBA, and then I think he went overseas. And then Drew Barry. Drew Barry played for Georgia Tech, and if I'm not mistaken, he played with Travis Best, and he went on to have like a cup of coffee, maybe like a year or a half a season in the NBA with the Hawks.
Cup of coffee in the league.
Yeah, and then like John and Brent, obviously, you know, did their thing a little bit.
Slam dunk champion, man.
Yeah, so shout out to him. Yeah.
All right, B. Austin, what you got on Rick Barry or the Barry family for that matter?
I'm gonna keep mine to Rick. I think that the nickname for Richard is not Rick, but we're gonna leave that alone. He's on my all-time top Caucasian player list, probably around number five. I think that he was super underrated, and his personality was a little standoffish, and some would say a little arrogant and cocky. But when you're that good, why not?
Yeah.
And the underhanded foul shot. So Rick,
foul shot. I have a quick question to you, gentlemen, then we can move on.
Why
is it that is it a pride thing? Why is it that no one tries that? Considering
no one wants to look like a dick.
Yo, but my thing is, if you were able to do that as a player, and let's just say you can shoot 85%.
No.
It's a pride thing, right?
No, I can't look like that. I can't look like that.
Well, that's what's wrong with you guys these days in the league.
Yep, absolutely.
Yo, if Dwight Howard could shoot like 86%, a high 80%, yo, he might average 40.
Hey, everybody wants to look good instead of be effective.
I think Dwight Howard should shoot like that.
See, it's just like Billy Hoyle told y'all. No, let's just move on, man. Y'all better look good. Go ahead, Dad. Tell me about what happened while they were on the grind.
Black dudes, man.
All right, man.
Why y'all on the grind? Of course, is brought to you by Bay Financial Services. Just go to our website, warroomsports.com, click on our sponsors tab, and click on the Bay Financial Services logo. Make sure you get your money right. Fellas, did you hear about former Dolphins receiver Mark Super Duper beating his son unconscious? The story goes, you know, he lives down in Jacksonville. And his Jacksonville home, the 54-year-old Duper, was arrested Wednesday and spent the night in jail. You know, he posted $5,000 bail because apparently he and his son got into three altercations in one night. Two of those altercations ended with his son allegedly being knocked unconscious. Now, former Dolphins defensive end Hugh Green was at the house, said he witnessed all the brawls, and that the son, Marcus Duper, started the fights, and his father acted in self-defense. As a matter of fact, Mark Duper and his wife were the ones who were, like, calling police while these altercations were going on. So what do you guys think? You know, is this a War Room Sports speculation moment? Anybody want to tell me what happened that night?
I have my theories, but I'm going to let Jimmy go ahead, man.
It's one of them situations, man, like, I don't even know how to speculate on this one, man. I mean, obviously we must have had a contentious relationship leading up to this moment. And, you know, I don't have any sons, but, you know, I know how it is for family to, you know, say things that really lead you there. So, you know what I mean? His son probably said, now it's time to speculate. His son probably said some things that, you know, he shouldn't have or he knew would push his dad's button. And, you know, pop up the ass. I mean, it is what it is, you know.
He probably said if it wasn't for Dan Marino, you'd be Ty Pinkston. I'd have stole him.
Which is a true statement, you know what I mean? But sometimes the truth hurts, man.
My speculation is this one of those situations where a teenager, you know, he's 17, probably, you know, as big as his daddy, if not bigger, probably, you know, puffing his chest out a little bit, said the wrong things, and Mark Duper probably had to introduce him to grown man strength. If you guys don't know what that is, then, you know, come at your dad. Disrespect your pop right now if you don't know what grown man strength is. And I'm talking about people our age. If your pop, like, in his 60s, disrespect him. You'll find out. But I hope the Duper family, you know, get that together because you can't be knocking your son unconscious. Even though Mark says that part isn't true. And he said everything will come out, you know, in the courts if it goes that far. But he said he's disappointed that his son, you know, would tell the investigators that stuff.
So. I think that if more kids got beat up and knocked unconscious, we wouldn't have some of the problems we have. I think his son caught his son with skinny jeans on.
I think that I'm very pleased with the way that War Room Sports has chosen to handle this topic, because some of the more liberal don't punish your parent kids out there have quickly jumped to slander Mr. Duper and throw him under the bus. Now, we can do that with regards to his talent level, but with his parenting, I think that we got to pull up, slow down, and understand that a 17-year-old boy, when disrespecting his pop, what other recourse does dad have? Because disrespect, when left unchecked, leads to death. So it's your duty as a pop to knock your son out if he's out of pocket and he wants to understand what goes on between grown men when you get out of pocket and out of place.
At the very least, cave his chest in.
Exactly.
Something got to happen.
When you're 17, I can't spank you anymore. I can't ground you because I know when I was 17, you throw me in the room, I'm just leaving out the window. So you're going to have to experience some things out of love. Out of love. It's not out of anything other than love. Because while I'm going to knock you out, the next man who doesn't love you might put you under.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there it is. Speculation. My speculation is that his son did poor research and did not do his due diligence because he figured, okay, my pop is 54. You know, at 55, that's when, like, people start getting, like, AARP benefits. And the son was probably like, yeah, when I get about 17, 18, pops to be 54, 55, you know, he pop off at me or he try to, you know, discipline me. I'm going to put him in his place. And he just made a bad gambling calculation and got knocked the blank out.
Coach, it's the bottom line. He didn't know what grown man strength was, and he found out. He found out every time he woke up Wednesday night. Let's move on, man.
Go ahead, man.
Tiger Woods won the Arnold Palmer Invitational last week, and he miraculously is back to number one, to the number one ranking in the world. Now, we've had conversations over the past year, year and a half, if Tiger would ever get back to what he once was. And, you know, we here and a lot of other people, you know, around, you know, a lot of people were doubtful. You know what I'm saying? He had dropped to 58th in the world at one point. He has 3 wins already this year. He has 6 wins in the past 53 weeks. He spent a total of 124 weeks, you know, outside of that number one ranking, and he finally got it back. He's 4 wins from tying Jack still with majors, and he's 5 wins from tying Sam Snead for the most PGA Tour wins. Are you guys impressed? Because I've seen a lot of people this week that says they're not impressed until Tiger wins a major. What do you
guys think? I'll jump on this. It's basically, we talked about, you know, Tiger Woods being under Yamage control and, you know, certain things that he was used to not being in his life. But as a lot of people know, Lindsey Vonn, who is a professional athlete in her own right, a skier, her and Tiger have been dating, you know, for a while now. So I think Tiger has finally settled down with someone to help him get some of those things that he was used to feeling back. And that has translated to his golf game for now.
Yeah, but what do you guys think when people say, well, I'm not impressed until he wins a major? I mean, I know Tiger has set the bar that high, but I kind of think that people are still taking for granted how difficult it is to win any golf tournament, let alone a major.
But
it's still at a golf course.
Yeah,
it's still at a golf course.
You said it yourself. You and Akil both made great points because he came out officially, you know, with the whole Lindsey Vonn relationship. And, you know, I guess it's like having his life back in order because for a while, it wasn't just that he went through the situation with his wife. He was unhealthy. Because Tiger Woods had brought something new to golf. He was the first golfer that trained as if he was a baseball, basketball, or a boxer. I mean, this guy, that's how he trained. So he was unhealthy. He was going through personal matters. He took some time off. He's starting to get healthy again. He has his personal...
Hold up, Jimmy. Excuse me. When you said he was the first golfer to train, I thought you, like, trained. Like,
I'm pretty sure Arnold and him did those kind of trains as well. But, no, but in all seriousness, you know, when you think about it, he's getting his personal life back together. He's getting healthier. And the fact that people aren't impressed by it just shows you that Tiger at this point is not even competing with Jack or Sam Snead or Arnold or anybody of that nature. Tiger is competing with Tiger. He set the bar so high. It's sort of like we talk about when Michael Jordan came back with the Wizards. He still was a great player, but he was competing against the Michael Jordan of the Bulls. So
I personally think, Jim,
the bar so high that it's, you know, it doesn't matter what he does. He's competing against Tiger Woods.
With all the majors that he's won, all the tournaments that he's won, I personally think that this may be Tiger's most impressive accomplishment. I mean, he, like I said, he dropped down to 58th in the world. He was not only in a slump, he not only had the personal issues. Tiger was a joke. He was a joke on every, you know, late night show, every comedian, us. Like, Tiger was just a punchline. And he's come all the way back, full circle, to reclaim the number one spot. I don't know how long, you know, if Rory wins this week, he can get it back. But I just think the whole major argument, like, come on, he has like 14 of them. Like, are you serious? If Tiger Woods doesn't win a major, it's not impressive. Like, I just don't understand people's thinking sometimes. Like, I'd like to see you go out there and win a golf tournament at your local club. Like, come on, man.
I was reading that she even joked about it at one point, and that's Lindsey. They were saying that, you know, she was using him as a clown him and when everything was going on. So he's even made it back to the point where someone who once clowned him is, like, now, you know, taking pictures with him and posting them on the social media. So, you know, Tiger's bounced back, man. You know, salute to Tiger for getting his life right.
I think he's at a point where I'm not going to call it, like, what it was before, but I mean, lately he's been kind of dominating the game again. So
prodigal son returns.
The Masters are coming up. I'd even bet against him. You know how they used to make those bets, Tiger Woods or the field. I'd take the field as far as the Masters go, but you know what I'm saying? Like, just because he does, if he doesn't win that, I don't think it takes away from anything that he's done lately and his comeback in the sport. So, those are my thoughts. If you're not impressed, show me something better. But y'all boy, y'all Philly boy, Lenny Dykstra, we all know about, you know, what this man is and what his past and what his, you know, what lately has been happening in his life. But one of his employees, his former employees, have written a book about, you know, what they call this sociopath, Lenny Dykstra, and many of the details have come out in the New York Post. I just want to read to you guys a few of the things that this person said in a book about Lenny Dykstra. It said Dykstra liked to leave large amounts of feces in the toilet so he can hear the shrieks of hotels grossed out maids. He once told a female executive in a meeting that he had impregnated three women in the same night and made them all get abortions. He referred to Tiger Woods and Derek Jeter as darkies, Willie Mays as a field nigger, and Venus and Serena Williams as baboons. He tried to get an employee to falsify a document so he could get access to his son Cutter's money. Then they say there are additional details about his penchant for placing Craigslist ads and then exposing himself. One woman said Dykstra grabbed her by the neck and pushed her head down to his groin and told her she was going to see God. The LAPD detective who arrested Dykstra called him a total sociopath and among the top three most egregious criminals he'd come across in his 24 years on the force. Jimmy, you are a big Phillies fan from way back in the day. What's wrong with your boy, man? I used to love Lenny Dykstra when he was a Philly because he represented everything that, you know, you think Philly dudes should represent. But he
was always a guy who was known as being, like, you know, crazy or abnormal.
I read these articles
about the situation, man, it was funny. It was funny, but it wasn't funny because obviously this man is sick, but he was acting as if he was a tyrant. Like, you're a baseball player. Some of the people that work for him were talking about him as if he, you know, he was like one of the kings on Game of Thrones or something. Like, he was punishing people and making them do this. And it was like, yo, you're Lenny Dykstra, though. Like, seriously? But, you know, the guy's a creep. I thought I was a creep, but he's a creep, yo.
Yeah, Lenny lost his mind. Kill, what do you think about Lenny?
Yo, that's just crazy, man. Like, I don't know if it was the steroids or something, but definitely he just really messed up, man.
That's what made him a great player was the fact that he was kind of awesome. Like, he did things. He took a lot of chances in terms of swinging at pitches, stealing bases. That's what made him a great player. But sometimes what makes people great as players makes them horrible as human beings.
I always knew that he was kind of off, Jimmy, but I don't think I ever knew that Lenny Dykstra allegedly was a racist. You know what I mean? Like, I'd always excuse him for being off, but sometimes you need to be off to be great. Huh?
They all look like racists to me. John Crutch, Lenny Dykstra. I'm sorry, but go ahead,
though. Maybe that whole squad, like, that 93 Phillies team did have, like, a country boy
a
feel.
A bunch of eyeballs and country.
It had a redneck feel to
crazy
it.
Crazy, too, though.
In a
Aaron
big
Dalton
city.
Was crazy, too.
It was like redneck from the
Dalton
big
was
city
crazy.
Type thing.
John Crutch was crazy.
Yeah, John Crutch is definitely crazy.
John Crutch still crazy, and they gave him a job.
You're going to see God.
Last thing, because we're running behind. This is a story for you, Jimmy, because you saw it happen. Phil Jackson joined Twitter yesterday. All I got to say is, uh-oh, Twitter's about to be Zen Nation, because dude had like 23,000 fans in like a half hour. What did you say? His first tweet said what?
Yo, 11 championship rings. And then he had, like, errors in it. It was, like, 11 rings. And, yo, it's like, you know how when you type sometimes, like, you may, you know, try to, like, hit a letter and you put shit by mistake so it'll put the icon up here? Like, that's what his looked like that. But it still said 11 championship rings. And first off,
I heard, matter of fact, Gutierrez from down Florida, I forgot what newspaper he covers, but that he writes for. But he said he heard it was done purposely because he was trying to say that with all of these rings on my fingers, it's hard for me to text. It's hard for me to type.
Damn! See, so, always on something
so,
else, man.
Yeah, so I don't know if that's true or not, but there's supposed to be. If it's not true, he gave him the idea on national TV to come out and say that's what it was. So we'll see if Phil was thinking ahead of the curve like that, if he was getting his zen on.
Because it's Phil Jackson, I believe that. First off, his Twitter name is @PhilJackson11.
I think that's Genie Buzz's account. That's Genie's account.
So he's telling you what it is from the gate.
Alright, well that's crazy. Look, everybody, check out our website at warroomsports.com. While you're there, be sure to sign up for the War Report. That's our weekly newsletter. Click on the Contact Us tab to send a message about our company, our show, and inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. For general inquiries, email us at info@warroomsports.com. While you're browsing the site, click on the memorabilia tab to buy War Room Sports merchandise. Click the blog tab to read our latest articles on the All's Fair in Sports and War blog. We got a baseball series going on right now by KC Mack, a.k.a. Leroy McConnell III. Then you can click the respective icons to like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to our iTunes podcast, download our free War Room Sports mobile app, or to watch our videos at warroomsportstv.com. Join the JW Philly Realty chat room right now during the show at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom to enter the chat room. Just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't have one or if you don't want to create one, you can sign in through your Facebook and Twitter accounts. And while you're at it, click follow to get updates and reminders about the show. We'll be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room during the show. So to call in and speak with us directly, dial a Digital Extreme Technologies hotline, which is open right now at 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. So let's talk. We're about to get into some NBA. So if y'all want to call in and talk about this heat streak or the heat streak that was, now's the time. Jimmy, you got it. All right. Well, this NBA rap is brought to you
by Stitcher Smart Radio. Listen, everybody has a smartphone. You want to hear the War Room. So just listen on Stitcher. And you can do that by going to stitcher.com/thewarroom. Or hitting the Stitcher logo directly on our website. You can hear it on your iPhone, your Android phone, and if you have a BlackBerry or Palm phone and you still want to listen to the War Room, although you need to upgrade your phone, guess what? You can still hear our show. There's no memory or storage wasted. Again, go to stitcher.com/thewarroom, and when asked for the coupon code, use the War Room. That's one word. Because they currently have a contest going on, which you can enter to win some money. But let's just talk about some basketball. Let's get right to it.
Jimmy, if they listen on the BlackBerry, they can listen to the show while they're on their way to the store to upgrade their phone.
There you go. He said. Players of the week. Past week were one LeBron Ramon James.
Again.
And James Harden. Fear the beard. Beard
again.
In the house. Yeah, no
All
doubt.
All right, LeBron led the Heat to
James Harden.
He led the Heat to a 4-0 mark, of course, because Miami was in the midst of their 27-game winning streak. During that week, they extended the streak to 26 games, which is the second longest in NBA history. He averaged 30.8 points, 10 assists, 8.8 rebounds, 2.5 steals, and 2 blocks while shooting 59% from the field. He recorded his fourth triple-double of the season with 25 points, 12 rebounds, and 10 assists. And, of course, that was the week where the Heat rallied from a 27-point deficit to beat the Cleveland Cavs. They also beat Boston, you know, holding off Jeff Green and his outburst. And this is the sixth time LeBron has won player of the week this season. James Harden led the Rockets to an undefeated week. 3 wins. He averaged 26 points, 4 rebounds, and 3.7 assists. James Harden, you know, this is the third time he's won player of the week honors this season. So shout out to LeBron James and to James Harden for their multiple player of the week nods. Pretty sure they're both in the midst of the MVP race. You know, LeBron is up at the top of
it. That's over with, yo. This dude going to win his fourth MVP. Yo, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's crazy, man. Still hate him. Anyway, let's talk about the Heat and that streak that was halted at 27 games last night in Chicago. I mean, everybody was watching because you saw everybody have a comment or a response to it. And we were talking about this before we came on today. But anyway, what do you gentlemen think about the streak overall and how it ended?
I think with my I'm a Bulls fan, obviously, right? So it's second quarter, Nate Robinson hitting threes and yelling to the crowd, and I'm like, yo, that means nothing. Even if we go up 20,
are going to come back and win. So then it gets to like the third quarter and we're up. Fourth quarter, you know, like 8 minutes we're up. I'm saying to myself, okay, here come the Heat, going to make their run. Then we're up 4 minutes, and it seemed like the last 4 minutes were like the longest 4 minutes ever. And I'm saying to myself, we are going to lose. And then even down to the last seconds when Taj Gibson fumbled the ball out of bounds, I was like, what are you doing, you know, idiot? Like, and then, but luckily we had 0.2 left. So, yeah, it was a great streak. And the fact that we beat the Heat, I mean, I think that's the highlight of our season because we have nothing to look forward to except for early playoff exits.
Yo, so, I'll tell you one thing, Kill, you're hilarious because you're like the most pessimistic Cowboys and Chicago Bulls fan for that matter. I saw Kill on Twitter last night, like, instead of just saying, hey, great win by a team, he says, although we're not going anywhere and we didn't do anything, this is a great win by my Bulls. I'm like, damn.
Jimmy, you got to realize, even though Akil is not a fan of all four Philadelphia teams, he still grew up in Philadelphia. So you got to have some pessimism in you somewhere.
Akil don't even know how to be happy without being sad. although we stink, it's a great win by my Bulls. I'm like, damn. He said the same thing about football season, too. Cowboys is a great win, although we're not going anywhere this year.
We all know the greatness of the streak, even though a lot of people out there may have been trying to diminish it. 27 games in a row in a professional league is a hell of an accomplishment. Of course, you know, they didn't catch the 71-72 Lakers. And, you know, how realistic is it that anybody will ever do that? Like, nobody may ever catch the second-place team, which is the Miami Heat now. So the streak is what it was. I'm going to kind of concentrate on the game last night because, like Akil was saying, that was a great basketball game. You know, it was – even if you didn't have a horse in the race, which I didn't, it was a tense game because you really didn't know what was going to happen. I, too, thought at one point late in the game that the Heat were going to make that run that they'd been making on several teams during the streak, and I thought maybe they would come back and win the game. But the Bulls stood tough. Stood strong without Noah, without Rip, of course, without Derrick Rose. I'm basically surprised that they did it. I mean, you had some Bulls fans out there prior to the game saying that we were going to, you know, mark my words, we're going to end the streak. But every team that they played lately, their fans can say that because at some point they had to lose. So somebody was going to look like a genius at some point. So, you know, shout out to the Bulls. It was a very good game. Very good game. Do you guys see anything like any – is it a coincidence? Like, because you don't really see teams be as physical with the Miami Heat as the Bulls did. And do y'all think that could be a blueprint of at least not really stop this team, but how to neutralize this team, maybe be able to play with them in a playoff series? No?
No, because you gotta have Tom Thibodeau as your coach. Like Tom Thibodeau, like I don't even think we practice offense. Like our defense is so hardcore. Like it doesn't matter who's out there. We are locking you up. So if you don't have a coach with that mentality, I don't think you can do it.
Yeah. Thibodeau definitely has proven his worth. I think this might be his best coaching job yet. And he already won Coach of the Year once, and did he come like second last year or something like that?
Yeah, Thibodeau's a good coach, man.
Because, like Kill said, and I brought it up in previous shows, like those dudes defend. And when you think about it, when the Celtics won the one championship they won with the trio, Thibodeau was their assistant coach who implemented their defense. So this guy can coach his tail off. Imagine if he had some talent on his team because they was running out there with some jokers, man. I'm like, yo, why are they even in this game? They didn't have, like, their three best players, let alone, like, they didn't have, well, I'm going to say which one is it. Rip wasn't there. Of course, Derrick Rose isn't there. And Noah wasn't there either. So it was like.
Bellinelli wasn't there.
Yo,
I was going to say they got a good contribution out of Luol Deng, though. But I would say from junkies to ruffians, from being tied up by Colombians, I think that roughing them up a bit was kind of reminiscent and reminded me a little bit of Jordan up against the Pistons and then Jordan up against the Knicks in terms of like going at them. Now, LeBron is much more of a physical specimen than Michael Jordan was, and it's funny because the people that were beating up Michael Jordan were a lot bigger than Michael Jordan, but the people beating up LeBron are like his size and smaller. So I think if anything, I guess just like Chuck Daly's idea, if anything you could do to kind of frustrate dude and frustrate those guys, I think can help. I don't think it'll hurt you any if you have the goons to do it. And it seemed like it got to him a little bit yesterday. I don't know if it is what completely knocked it off me. Those guys started to the Bulls hit. I mean, the freaking Heat, they hit shots a lot. Like, even when they don't get the drives to the basket, they do hit shots a lot. And last night they weren't hitting them as consistently, especially late. So, I mean, maybe that is something to it, the roughness.
I agree with PJ, man, because the whole thing, it's not like PJ said, LeBron is such a diesel dude. He's such a physical specimen. It's not like you're doing it to hurt him, because really the guys that are roughing him up are probably going to take the brunt of the punishment when you get in front of LeBron anyway. With LeBron, it's a mental thing, and I think they did get to him mentally. I mean, you saw the when he didn't even try to run through Boozer's screen. He loaded up just to give Boozer a hit. That's a critical point in the game where you're giving up a flagrant foul and you know that you're going to get that call. You know, there's a lot of people out there trying, oh, they're cheating, they shouldn't have called that call.
You can see his face before he made
on
the
his
foul.
Face. Yeah, you saw the intent on his face, like, I'm going to do this. So I think that's a really bad point in a game to get a flagrant foul purposely when you can still win this game. So if you can get into his head like that, I know it's only the regular season. Hopefully he wouldn't get frustrated enough to make a play like that in the playoffs, but they got to him a little bit last night.
All you
got
to do is hit that headband. All you got to do is hit that headband and expose his hairline, and he gets frustrated. Notice any time that his headband got knocked off. He get mad when he got readjust that headband without a mirror. So
yeah.
I would say
like,
him in the
yeah, you're right. I do this in the locker room, man. They got to be perfect, man.
I noticed a couple things with this game. They definitely got to LeBron. I think they got to the Heat in general, and the weaknesses kind of showed up on their front line, the rebounding and the putbacks. But I still think over a 7-game series, even with weaknesses exposed, the Heat are just good enough to win. So I don't see any team out there in the field that's strong enough to constantly expose those weaknesses, play them that physical, and score the ball enough to turn that into 4 victories over them in a 7-game series.
And I fully agree, because I've been, you know, arguing with people all day who thinks just because the streak is ended that it's the end of the world. You kind of have to remind people they're still the hottest team in the league. They just won 27 out of 28 games.
I heard a
losing
pundit.
This game doesn't make
another,
them.
I heard another pundit today say something that was very interesting, and he found a way to tiptoe the line and congratulate the Bulls on a masterful effort and execution of a game plan at work, but then also excuse LeBron. And there is some validity to it. He said the way that the Bulls played LeBron is a brand of basketball that hasn't been seen since the early 2000s. You know, it was prevalent in the 90s and in the 80s, but they don't play that brand of basketball anymore because a lot of those fouls weren't even really cheap shots. It was just very physical and a very rough brand of basketball. They weren't out there trying to really hurt him. They were just fouling him pretty hard.
I don't necessarily
hard.
Think the game was as rough as people were making it out
people,
to be.
Well,
I know, I'm sitting there like, y'all watching
like,
the game,
I don't think it was that rough. But you also have to remember, in our years of watching basketball, we've all seen much rougher. So to us, that's like, well,
so that's what
physical,
I'm saying. Like the whole Taj Gibson foul on LeBron.
Yeah.
That was the softest Russian sickle I've ever seen in my life. That was Oakley, the dude was drawing blood or something.
Yeah.
I think it was worse just because he caught him off balance and his leg got caught under him. But I don't think it was that
again,
hard.
But again, then I would ask, do you think that it was more physical than LeBron and the Heat are used to seeing?
I think he took exception to 2 fouls. All in all, I don't think the game was really that physical. But, you know, since that's the title people put on it, I wanted to ask, does that physical brand of basketball you know, get to the Heat a little bit.
Yo,
but the fouls definitely caused LeBron to be frustrated.
But at the same time, Dev, you're right, man. They over-exaggerate. I was watching highlights the other day on YouTube. I often do this. I don't know why, but of 90s basketball. And in a Bulls-Pistons game, yo.
You'd be faking, but you missed it.
Scottie Pippen, yo, took Lambeer, yo. And he, if this was wrestling, yo, it was like the doomsday device that the Road Warriors used to do. He jumped and he just tickled them. And they fell. Yo, they didn't even call a flagrant. Like, yo, it's like. The brand of basketball that, you know, now, of course, you want to get away from that because you want to play hoops. This isn't football. But it's like, dog, the fouls wasn't that hard at all. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Yeah,
are we that soft as a
point.
Sport now?
They're not used to playing with any real physical melees going on.
But for
the whole thing, I mean, they lost one game. If it wasn't for the fact that they won 27 in a row, nobody would even care. They're going to get
true.
To the playoffs, and they might beat the Bulls in four games.
This,
like, seriously.
This is
like,
true.
On,
they might sweep the Bulls. This is true. The Bulls aren't particularly talented enough to score a lot of points on the Heat. With
yeah,
or without Derrick Rose.
It's one game,
LeBron
man.
Said that he's been on the receiving end of hard fouls throughout the season, and he's basically managed to keep his cool. Earlier in the season, Coach Spo even sent tapes to the league office showing a series of hard fouls on LeBron and Dwayne Wade. So, you know, the interview, I kind of found myself sitting there while LeBron was kind of complaining. I was, you know, I was kind of going back to my days when I kind of wished that I was one of LeBron's handlers, like telling TV, like, shut up, Brown. Like, just is one game, like, you don't want to look like you're crying because you lost one game, because your streak is over. I mean, they a lot of people didn't make a big deal out of it. I'm not even making a big deal out of it, them leaving the court and not shaking hands. My only thing with that is, what's changed now? You guys do it every night. The Heat are one of the most friendly teams in the league, you know, when they're kicking your ass. And then, you know, when they lose a game, all of a sudden they're not shaking hands. I don't care if they take the handshake out of the game, period. But my thing is, if you do it every night,
What
was different about last night? You know what I'm saying? You expect people to shake your hands when you embarrass them, and then you lose a game. So I kind of think last night really got to him because he was in the post game complaining about hard fouls, talking about all season, and you know he and Dwayne Wade respectively are like 6th and 8th in the league as far as foul shots per game. And as much as people wanted to call the game rough last night, that foul on Boozer was like LeBron's first foul of the game.
They saw too. Yo,
that was late in the fourth quarter.
It is what it is. The game is like, it's too much being made of the whole thing. Again, I said they may sweep the Bulls, but I actually hope the Bulls beat them because I think it would be funny just because I know Noah can't stand those guys, and that would make for great TV. But
that would make for a great interview when we have Noah on the show. So
you ain't never lied, yo.
You know, I'm trying to get him before the game so he can talk trash first.
Yo, how about this, though? The Nugget streak, yo, that's also over, man. The Nuggets had a streak, too, that's that ends at 15.
Did they?
Not a Knicks. The Knicks got the longest streak.
Who cares?
You know what, Jim?
How about
we brought it up because we have to, is what we do. But the only people, now this is just my opinion, the only people in the last 2 or 3 weeks who bought up the Nugget streak were Heat haters.
Like not even Nuggets. Not even Nuggets fans.
How hard is it to lose 27 straight when
Nuggets fans? Do you know any Nuggets fans? I don't know any Nuggets fans.
No, bitch. I know one.
Yo, the
know
only people I know that brought that up were like Heat haters. Shout out to Victor Santiago, one of our page members on our Facebook page. He's relentless. That's my man. He don't waver though. He don't waver. He can have 100 people come on and talk trash to him, and he does not waver. He is relentless.
So
shout out
to him. Shout him out. Shout out to some of the guys that volunteer to carry LeBron's luggage and hold his clothes.
They know
they
who they
were throwing
are.
Parties. They were throwing parties after every Heat victory. Like,
even
see,
if
here,
they beat their team.
Because I think we're talking
even
about consistency now. They were throwing parties after every Heat victory, basically saying the 33 win streak was in jeopardy, it's in the bag. Then when the Bulls beat them, they'd say, oh, that's just one game.
It
only takes one to break a streak.
Before we came on, I was telling you gentlemen that the Heat, their haters as well as their lovers are both irritating,
disgusting.
Yo. It's very difficult to talk about the Heat objectively because There's no in the middle. Young people love him or they hate him, and it's gross on both sides.
Because the fact is, Jimmy, people like us who try to stay in the people like us who try to stay in the middle, you know, we praise them when they deserve praise, we criticize them when they deserve criticism, but either side is going to call us, you know, when we criticize, we're Heat haters, and then when we give them praise, then we're Heat lovers. So it's like people kind of forget what they call it. Like yesterday, you called me a hater.
Disgusting.
Now I'm a Heat lover now.
It's disgusting on both sides.
It really is. It really is.
It definitely is, man. But, yo,
polarizing
on,
team, man. Polarizing team.
Uh-huh. Absolutely, man. Moving on, man. The homie is out, hurt, 6 weeks with a torn meniscus, man.
QB!
You
know, oh, man. Meta? Yo, what happened to Pete?
Yo,
Pete's got hurt.
Hey.
Hurt.
Hey, yo, what happened to Pete? You think it'll affect the Lakers at all?
I think so, man, because Ron
was balling.
Was playing pretty well recently, yeah, and you know, when the playoffs come, he seems to step up. He's so versatile in what he can do for the team because, you know, you have him out there to harass people on the defensive end, but when the team is struggling, you know, that's when he seems to be at his best offensively, so I think that's big. I think, you know, somebody like Earl Clark can step in for a while, but he's not going to bring you everything that Meta World Peace brings you when he's at his best.
See,
plus, it takes away from the
depth
of the team, you know?
I look at it a little differently because Meta World Peace irritates me at this point when I'm pulling out them unnecessary 3-point shots that he does.
The jump, he don't even jump.
He just throw them up there.
Yeah,
always shoot them at the worst times of the game. Like,
if
Joe Namath, man, as a team, they are
sometimes
shooting that
leaning. Sometimes leaning to the side when you
find a level.
Yeah, like yo, coach. Of course, Coach Kill will pick that up. He definitely does, though.
A level of objectivity, though, Jimmy. And you looking at Meta's game, not as a Laker fan. Would you tell him to stop shooting three altogether?
Honestly, here's the thing. Like, when you think about it, it may take him out of the game all around because sometimes I don't think he's in the game anyway, yo. I might tell him to stop shooting threes.
He a little slow, though, so, you know.
That's the thing, though.
I still think he's an important cog, though. I don't think it'll all fall apart without Meta, but he has been a really good contributor in any Laker run in the last few years. So I don't know, man.
I don't know. I look at him different. I think the boy should have retired 2 years ago.
But
anyway,
they keep going through stuff, man. Even when they start to get full strength, something happens. So, I think Jimmy's a little harder on him because he's a Laker fan. So everything he does bad.
No,
you
but
know,
you know what it is though? It's like
it's going to magnify for you because you have
Meta,
to take it.
When Meta first came there, yo, Meta was like my favorite non-Laker at the time, and then he came to the Lakers. It's like yo,
and
that
stuff got old.
He played in Houston, yo. He looked like he was one of the top 5 players in the game at the time. Like he was balling. It's like his athleticism died in that summer. That summer when he came back as a Laker, it was like, yo, what happened to that?
What happened
to
me?
He was in the Forum Club, man. He was in the Forum Club. He probably caught him.
probably got that monkey. Anyway, man.
That monster.
Real quick, though, I'll ask you guys about John Wall because John Wall wants a max contract. Does anybody think that John Wall is a max contract player?
Absolutely never.
see, that's
well, how many,
for
let me ask you
this
question, Austin. How many max contract players do you think are in the league right now?
That's
period?
What I was about
because
to say.
Five.
Don't quantify that because
five.
You think it's only five? Yeah. So that right there shows that, you know.
Yeah, so that's why, like, we really can't talk about this in a 100% objective way because the way we think, we don't think anybody deserves to be a max contract person.
Hold on.
So we have to go
on. Based upon who else has a max contract,
yeah,
do you think John Wall?
Based upon the market value, do you think John Wall should get a max contract?
Yo, this is the thing. This is the deal. The max contracts have changed with the new collective bargain agreement. So
all
the max contracts, are not one and the same, especially with a player less than 4 years in the league. So the max that Eric Gordon received and the max that John Wall received is not that Kobe/Durant/LeBron max. It's a lot cheaper, but even still, if I'm the Wizards, this is what I would say.
I'm here to tell you, Nino Brown says your services are no longer needed in the community.
This is an interesting point for me because being in the D.C. area, I do a lot of conversation about John Wall, and over the last few seasons, I'd say the last three, we've seen him go from the hottest new up-and-coming point guard to where he's kind of like the forgotten man with all of this hype surrounding the point guard position right now. I still think he is one of the most talented point guards in the league. There's still a lot of chinks in his armor, still a lot of holes in his game. And even with this recent 47-point game that he's riding off of, I saw him make shots that I've never seen him make. So until he shows me that consistently, I'm thinking he just had a hot night. John Wall will give you 9 assists, but John Wall
for his career,
7 turnovers too.
For his career, he's a 16.2 per game scorer, 8 assists, and 4.4 rebounds. The only people in their career who averaged 16, 8, and 4 were Oscar, Magic, and Chris Paul. You also have to remember the Wizards started 5-28 this season. When John Wall, when he came back, they've gone 21-16 ever since. In the month of March, he's averaging 21.8 points. His rebounds and assists basically stayed the same as his career averages. And he's shooting 52% in March. And like Austin just alluded to, he had that game against Memphis where he had 47-7-8. So, I mean, it seems as if he's making a good case. Like I'm like you guys. I don't think there are a lot of people deserving of a max contract. But since we're speaking from a market value standpoint, it seems obvious. We don't have that much of a sample size to go by. But it seems obvious that when he's in the lineup, the Wizards are a much, much better team.
They are.
So
they are.
At the same time, they had more injuries than just John Wall, though. And the Wizards, I didn't think coming into the season that the Wizards would be a 5-28 team. I looked at their complete roster and thought the Wizards would fight for it, for the eighth spot at the very least. So it's kind of hard to tell, but they seem like a much better team with him in the lineup.
With all that said, I didn't
answer the question, and I'm not going to.
You could pay him the money, and if you had the right support system, see him step off into the sunset and become the player whose skill and production matches his potential. But you could also pay him, and let's face it, Washington is one of those places that has the stench of rot and decay.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of good things that happen basketball-wise with players here in D.C. So
not a lot of free agents are going to want to come play no matter who's there.
So
it's going to be hard to build a winner. You don't want to, you know, it may become a situation where they do pay him, and when they don't do anything substantial, you know, the fans are going to start blaming him. You know,
right.
that's how fans do. That's what we do. So it's a difficult decision for them.
I'm rooting for dude, but when
you
we
know
get
what
to
the biggest
the money,
factor will be Austin. The biggest factor will be what they think of his work ethic. After they pay him this money, is he going to keep working to be the best that he can be, or is he going to be satisfied? Now, he openly came out and asked for this money, so you would hope that he would keep, you know, chugging along if he gets it. But
I want to see him and Bradley Beal in the backcourt together for 2 or 3 years and see what that turns into. Interesting point that you bring up, work ethic. 2 summers ago, John Wall was everywhere. He was all over YouTube at all of these summer league games, but the key there is you're not working on developing the things you can't do in summer league.
Yeah, you're just running pick
up. You're just running up and down the court, and, you know, you playing with summer league guys. Like, that's not really working on your game. So, I don't know.
Yeah, man, I mean,
I would no max deal.
It's a lot that has to be thinking. I think that he'll get it. Dev made some valid points in terms of the company he's in with the numbers that he's putting up, and they definitely play better with him. And, you know, man, nobody, Michael Jordan would walk through that door.
Jimmy, they don't really have a choice.
Wes Unseld ain't walking through that door,
like you said. Anyway, last comment about basketball before we get into some March Madness, man, is I just want to recognize Jeff Green because he's playing his heart out, no pun intended.
Salute, Jeff.
You know, so salute to Jeff
Green. He's playing
his
heart out.
Yo, man, shout out to Jeff Green, man. because he's balling as of late. And, you know,
yeah,
I'm not even trying to be smart, no pun intended, because the guy had heart surgery.
Yeah, he had an aortic aneurysm.
Yeah, that's, like, scary. But he came back, and he's, like,
and dropped 43 on LeBron.
Yeah, yo, but he's played well since then. Stop going back to that game.
He's averaging 11.9 for the season, but, and you know, lately, since he's been in the starting lineup, he's averaging over 19 points a game with that 43-point outburst against the Heat. You know what I've always said about Jeff Green, man? Even when he was at Georgetown, when he came out of Georgetown, I always thought he was a very talented player who was never aggressive enough offensively. And I always thought that an aggressive Jeff Green could be a beast on any level, and I think he's starting it. The funny thing, Jimmy, he starts to get aggressive after having heart problems. Like, you should have had more heart when you had more heart. Like, I don't get it, but shout out to Jeff Green, man. Yeah, I like Jeff Green,
man. But, Dan, that's what they were doing. They were fixing his heart. He went to see the Wizard.
I guess. And now that's why he hit the game winner last night, and his doctor was in attendance, and he went right over to his doctor and hugged him because, you know, maybe he did. That doctor, his name might be the Wizard. So,
yeah,
shout out to Jeff Green, man. He's been balling.
He's always
one more thing about the streak. I forgot to mention that, you know, the streak was 27 games long. LeBron James averaged 27 per game, and their biggest deficit they had to overcome in the streak was 27 to Cleveland. 27 is corny.
And they lost on the 27th. And they lost on the 27th.
And they lost on March 27th. Yo, what's wrong with 27? That's scary.
Yo.
It was written.
Weird. We all witnessed. All
right. So since the Sweet 16 is about to start any minute here.
16 ain't enough.
We're going to talk a little bit about the tournament so far, you know, how we got here. Of course, we're going to have a little bit of a hometown bias in here. We're going to talk a little bit about Temple and their loss to Indiana. Of course, we're going to talk about LaSalle because they're still in it. So our March Madness Sweet 16 wrap is brought to you by Audible. If you're scheduled too hectic to read as much as you want, we'll try audiobooks and kick back and let someone else do the reading for you. All you got to do is visit Audible and sign up for your free trial at audibletrial.com/warroomsports. In no time, you can be listening to the latest bestsellers, hands-free, stress-free, while getting other things done at the same time. You want to watch the tournament and listen to a book? You can do that. All right, fellas, Temple. We all grew up around Temple. You know, PJ and Jimmy went to Temple. What did you guys see? Why did Temple lose? I mean, besides the fact that they were supposed to lose to Indiana, it was a very tough game that went down to the wire. What did you all see that, you know, had our guys out of the tournament when it kind of looked promising early in the game?
Yeah, they didn't have scoring. They didn't have any scoring outside of Brother Wyatt. It seems like when he couldn't get the rock, like, cats were looking like, well, we need to get our score to rock instead of, like, stepping up and hitting shots. And I felt like Fran Dunphy made a mistake. He should have had Wyatt in pick and rolls or had the point guard in pick and rolls. They didn't
do
any
pick
and rolls. Yeah, mm-hmm. So that was my only
concern. I'm wondering why DeLeo is on the team. And that's a possibility as to he contributed.
Nah.
He played tough defense.
It's not what it lost. Because I want to keep it a bean. And people got mad when I said this. It's like Wyatt was out there playing with himself, but they were calling him the Paul Pierce of college basketball because of the way he plays. But he kind of got no help. But it's also he kind of like shot them out of the game because they stopped running their system, and he just started going one-on-one and taking all kinds of crazy shots.
Did you see anyone out there?
I was about to say, it comes to a point where the system is just not working, and, you know, you kind of got to do it.
The way he played, that's not how they got to where they were. If you watch Temple play at all this season, that's not how
Jimmy,
they got there. And
the way the rest of the guys played isn't the way they got there either. Their second leading scorer was 0-for-11.
Exactly.
Their second and third leading scorer were 0-for-17 combined. So
no,
it's one of those things where
I totally
going
get
outside
that,
of the system, I'm not going to get mad at that. If these
No, I'm not mad about it because if it wasn't for him, they wouldn't have been in the game to begin with. That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is he kept them in the game, but he also shot them out of the game. Some of those shots were just egregious. Like specifically the last one when the clock was running out, and my man is like fading out of bounds off the wrong foot, like just
that was a bad shot.
Craziness.
I mean, but when you're in that kind of run, you're gonna take some bad shots. Like, look,
yeah, what I'm saying is,
nothing.
I know that the second leading score was 0-for-11, but at the end of the day, you still have to play within your system in terms of what got you there. I understand that his shot was off. But you have to keep shooting until you get back. That's how you play.
He took 11.
They struggled.
Shoot till you hit.
He said he should have took 21. I mean, what the hell? He should have took 21. He said he shot 11. So what? He should have took 21.
So why
well,
is the leading
that's
scorer
what Ryan
should have
did.
Let the second
why
leading like scorer shoot 21 times?
Excuse me?
So you miss 11 shots and you let the second leading scorer shoot 21 and Wyatt is carrying the team.
What are you saying? I said he should have got more shots. Have you watched him play all the season outside of this game?
Yeah, I saw them play a couple times.
Who'd you watch them play, Austin?
Who they play? Hey, another
no,
Big
East. You're about to make it up. My point is this. That's not how they got there. So it's like, at the end of the day,
but your man got 11
offense.
Shots.
They played great. Excuse me?
He got 11 shots.
He needed more shots. He had to get into the rhythm. He did every. If you watched it, what he played on defense, he did everything perfect. He grabbed rebounds. He played his game. His shot wasn't falling. So you continue to give him shots. What do you mean?
I can't give you
11 shots.
Give you much more.
You got to keep shooting
more than 11 shots if you over 11. Like it's
not
like over 4, and we say nah, don't shoot.
You know how that game shook out though.
If Shaq and Kobe were playing, and Kobe was 0-for-11, does Kobe stop shooting?
Yo, the second leading scorer on Temple isn't Kobe though.
I understand that, but he's still the second leading scorer. What I'm saying is, you're saying 11 is enough. Why is 11 enough? Is 7 enough? If he's 0-for-7, is 7 enough? Or why is 11 a number that's enough?
So you would have wanted him to go 0-for-21.
I mean, listen, that's the shot you have to take if you want to make it further. One man is not going to take you here.
Yeah, but 21 shots is going to mess my offense up. Like you're saying that Wyatt
was
taking too many shots.
Up. What are you talking about?
Wyatt's taking too many shots, but then what you're really doing is just saying, okay, let the second leading scorer take too many shots. Temple doesn't get that many possessions and that many shots up.
No, what I'm saying is he has to keep shooting. You can't just go away from the guy because he's having off. He has to shoot.
He didn't go
back
away. He had 11 shots.
No, but he needed to have more shots is what I'm saying. You're saying he had 11 shots. I'm saying why is 11 the cutoff number for you?
I don't necessarily think that they went away because if you look at a lot of the plays in the game, like you were saying, I'm not even going to try to pronounce dude's name, Ola, whatever. He played very good defense off the ball on Wyatt. So a lot of times Wyatt couldn't even get the ball, and those guys, instead of taking shots, were worrying about waiting for him to get around this screen or waiting for him to get off. Of his defender, so those guys just weren't being assertive, in my opinion. That's how I saw it. So maybe he should have. Like, if this guy's getting bottled up outside of the ball, then you probably do have to take it upon yourself to take a few more shots.
And, that's a great point, man. Oladipo played decent defense, good defense.
Oh, that's his thing.
Wyatt.
He's a defender.
And Wyatt still got 35 up on him.
Yeah. I mean, the defense definitely got more aggressive in the second half after he realized he was getting his ass bust, but. You know, he stepped it up a little bit. But bottom line, they lost. It was one of those cases where
I've been to a couple of games, and I know that Scootie Randle sometimes has to shoot himself in the game. I understand you saying he got 11 shots. But, I mean, at the end of the day, man, that's not what got them there. It's him going playing hero ball. And, you know, either way, they're home now anyway, so it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, the end of that game shook out like something that we see a lot. The team that's favorite to win, the better team basically executes better down the stretch of a game, and they come out with that victory. But that's one thing about that's like Temple teams of the past. You know, even coached by Fran Dunphy, like even when they're not the better team, sometimes they execute better down the stretch to win games that they're not supposed to win. But this one, it just didn't happen for them. We got LaSalle, who's still in the tournament. They played in one of the play-in games that the NCAA doesn't want to call a play-in game, and now they're in the Sweet 16 against a Wichita State team who's not supposed to be there as well. So this is one of those games where either one of these teams have a very good chance of winning the game and advancing to a round that we didn't think LaSalle nor Wichita State was going to advance to. how far do you guys think LaSalle can take this run? Do you think they can beat Wichita State with that with this four-guard offense that they're running?
Yeah, I mean, that if they did win the game, that wouldn't shock me at all.
Right. I'm not shocked. Whoever wins this game is like, okay.
Because you got, I mean, you have to think about it. Like, the parity in college basketball, I mean, it is what it is. Look at how many double-digit seeds you have still playing right now. And, you know, there really is no powerhouse team. Louisville, of course, is still playing. It was the number one overall seed. But even if they were to lose, it wouldn't be shocking. So I definitely think they have a shot to win the game. Wichita State, you know, shouldn't be slept on. They it's a team that won 28 games during the course of the season. So, but LaSalle is another team that plays tough defense. And if you play tough defense in the tournament, you'll always have a shot.
Right.
You're going
to
always have a shot.
Quick as lightning, man. They're hard to stay in front of.
They have to find a way to put up enough offense, basically, because they're going to give you the effort on defense. And the tough-nosed team, you know, they play
hard. Your man Garland,
physical.
Southwest Philly floater.
Yeah. Although it wasn't even a floater, which is the funniest part about the whole thing.
First of all, he made that up on site, and it became like a Twitter phenomenon for everybody from Philly in like 5 minutes. Like, he made that up.
I mean, usually
in
Philly, when we say South Philly floater in Philly, that means it's a body in Cobb's Creek. That's what we usually call South Philly floater. You know, I mean, that's I'm just saying, though, Southwest Philly floater is like a body in Cobb's Creek.
No doubt. No doubt. All right, so so we'll see tonight if LaSalle can advance to the final eight.
That's this is tonight, man.
Yeah, this is one of those. This is the year. Like, you know, I do brackets. I pick Louisville to win, but y'all know I don't care about my brackets because I take 4.5 minutes to do them. And then I root against every team that I wanted to win because I like seeing upsets in the tournament. So I don't really care as much as everybody else. Like, people actually go around moping because their brackets are busted and this and that.
Yeah, I don't
they must
that.
Be in, like, those high-money leagues,
you know,
or something.
To me,
where
man,
they paid, like, $60
all luck to anyway.
And
just to the point, in terms of, like, the tournament, we talked about this last week, Dev, you were on, about whether you like it when there's, like, David and Goliath, or do you like the parity? So I would like to hear your opinion on whether you like the parity or not. And the reason I say this is because the last Temple game that I went to, they actually beat this LaSalle team, and meanwhile Temple's at home when LaSalle's playing. So,
but
you know, it's
funny. It's funny that y'all talked about that and you were asking, because my next sentence was, I want so bad for this year to be the year that one of these quote-unquote mid-majors wins the whole thing. So I love the parity. I think it makes the tournament that much better. Because even in years past, when there wasn't this much parity, what did we like to see, especially in the first round of the tournament? What did everybody get most excited about? Upset.
A team from the MEAC or SWAC winning.
So, yeah, I definitely love the parity. Let's go to Miami real quick, and we'll circle back to another mid-major we want to talk about, because the Miami-Marquette game just started. So, I wanted to talk to you guys about Miami losing their reserve center, Reggie Johnson. They said he's out at least until the Final Four. He is a reserve, but do you guys think they can make it that far without him and give him a chance to come back? Because this Marquette team, I believe, has out-rebounded everybody they've played damn near the whole season. So, you know, even though his numbers aren't great, this would be a game where you didn't want to lose a big man. So do you guys think Miami, you think they're in trouble tonight?
Yeah. Well, see, it goes back to the conversation we just had. Anytime you step on the floor, you're in trouble in this tournament, yo. here's something else. And not to, like, ignore your question, but, you know, Miami has a lot of fans, which are the U fans for the football program. And it's amazing how many of them are, like, hitting me up now talking about the U basketball. I've never heard anyone brag about Miami's basketball team as long as I've been breathing on this great earth. But now it's like, the U, like, seriously. But I think that in this tournament, there are too many, like, good centers. And Reggie Johnson was, you know, a rebounder as well as a good defensive player. So I think that could hurt them.
Yeah, I mean, he was a big body just to have down there.
And that's what I'm saying.
Dude,
I mean, in
like
a tournament, you need
6'10",
292. Takes up space, grabs a lot of rebounds. And that's the thing. So I definitely think they'll struggle. Now, I'm not going to say they'll struggle, but there'll be a difference in terms of their rotation and how they play. So it could affect them. And in this tournament, anything could affect you. The smallest thing could make a big difference.
Right. Well, let's talk about those dudes, man. Florida Gulf Coast University. They've been like the darlings of the tournament so far because they've beaten two good teams. Georgetown, which was a number two seed. A lot of people argue for Georgetown being a number one seed. And they beat San Diego State University. The thing with the Florida Gulf Coast situation is that they're beating these teams pretty good, and they're doing it in a very exciting manner because it's like they're like Lob City College right now. They're like the Clippers because, you know, they got like 13 dunks in the last game, and they got a lot of dunks, a lot of amazing dunks against Georgetown, who by all accounts is a very good defensive team. What do you guys make of these guys from Florida Gulf Coast University, and do you think, you know, the party's going to be over when they face Florida?
I think they have a shot. And here's the question I have when watching them play is how did those guys make it there? Because they are some uber athletes, and I just want to know how those, you know, not that everybody, not that the recruiters should find everybody all across the country, but the guys that play at that level athletically, how'd they get there? Like, if they had athletes, and anytime you have athletes in a tournament like this, you have a chance. But those guys be flying. They're fast.
Well, you know, it is Florida, Jim. It's kind of like in football, you know, the top recruits go to the Floridas, the Florida State, Miami, and then dudes trickle down to the smaller schools, but, you know, they're still Florida athletes. So maybe they just they got a few of the trickle-downs or something.
Yeah, man.
No, now this is the interesting thing because last Wednesday night when I was in Philly, I was at Jim Steak. Shout out to Jim Steaks on 4th and South Street in Philly. Now cut the check. I was eating upstairs and these guys were at the very next table from me. So they all had on their little sweatsuits that said FGCU, and you know, I had no idea what that was. So before I even, you know, acknowledged the dudes, I went to my phone and Googled it, found out what it stood for. And like I told you guys, I did my brackets in like 4 minutes. So I don't even think I paid attention to the school name that Georgetown was playing. So I had no idea this was the team that was about to face Georgetown in the tournament. I was thinking maybe they're Division II, you know, just I don't know why they were there. But before I left, I ended up, you know, speaking to a couple of the guys. And a couple of them had accents, so I think they got a few foreigners on that team. I think I heard one was from Switzerland or something like that. But, you know, before we left, I wished them luck. At the same time, after I found out who they were going to play, that was basically just lip service. I thought they were going to get crushed by Georgetown. And then, you know, Austin and I were watching the game last Friday night. And they out there playing with Georgetown. We're surprised about that, but the way the game ended, you know, with the alley-oops and the, you know, the fun that they were having out there, it was amazing to see, man, because Georgetown is starting to be that team for me in the tournament. They're about to be on the level of Pittsburgh, of teams that are always supposed to be good in the tournament, but they always seem to choke or flame out earlier than they're supposed to be. So I don't know if I want to put that on Georgetown or to how good this team was actually playing, but
a little bit of both.
Shout out to the Gulf Coast boys. Maybe, you know.
Yo, their university has been in existence since 1991.
The power of Philly.
It's funny because I, you know, when I was watching the Michigan game, I said, "Yo, Georgetown lost to an online school, you know."
Yo, they lost. Yo, they lost to a JUCO.
They lost to Strayer.
Yeah, it was crazy, man. But I'm still shocked at how they got some athletes down there now. I know their coach is a multimillionaire guy from Wall Street, and, you know, y'all can figure
the
out
model, what with the model for a wife.
So I'm going to chill on that because, you know, y'all can read in between the lines. Anyway, he's only coaching for fun, so, you know, never mind.
He's having a whole lot of fun right now.
So basically, Dev, you thought they were about to play like Millersville or Cheney or something, or Cookstown, and they wound up in the tournament. And also, y'all saying this coach is that much better than Isaiah Thomas as a coach and a recruiter, because remember, Isaiah was at FIU, and they couldn't even make the tournament at FIU with Isaiah Thomas. So, messed up.
we all know what Isaiah is as a coach and an executive, so I'm not even going to speak on that.
It's
one last thing about Florida Gulf Coast. I was listening to one of those guys talk in an interview the other day, and they went back to school in between the second round and, well, what they call the third round now, and the Sweet 16. So they've been back in school this week, and they said usually when they go to the cafeteria, they just eat their food, get up and leave. They said this time they were swarmed by, like, hundreds of people sitting there, cheering them on as they ate their dinner. And campus police actually had to escort them out of the cafeteria. Like, they're superstars now. They weren't even stars on their own campus. And now, they're on TV putting it on people. They all probably got new girlfriends.
They were behind the football program, and they don't even got a football program.
That's crazy. They have a huge baseball program, though, but the offerings they're getting right now is probably through the roof.
Yo, Bill, boxes are premium.
The royal penis is clean, Your Highness.
All right, man. So y'all know Tubby Smith was fired by Minnesota and Ben Howland was fired by UCLA. Of course, the first name to come up as possible replacements for both of these jobs was Shaka Smart. But Shaka said yesterday that he will remain at VCU. We've talked about this a few times.
Is Shaka Smart?
What do you guys think about about his decision to stay?
I know I'm in the minority, but I think it's a smart move. But that's just me. I'm in the minority on this. I know this already.
Maybe here, but from what I hear outside of the war room, I don't think you're in the minority. I've heard a lot of people say, if he's good there, then he's good. But
yeah, everyone likes loyalty in sports.
Yeah,
I mean, who was Duke before Coach K?
Yeah, I mean. See,
he's already getting them. He got Barkley and them donate money to buy buildings, so the money's going to be in the program. You know what I mean? So it's funny we're having this conversation now. 10 years.
Well, no, Barkley
now,
had already been a part of that because Barkley's coach at Auburn.
Yeah, I know his coach.
He's the coach at VCU.
Coach Auburn. I'm just saying, like,
he's
but now
a part
he's bringing attention to the program. That program in 10 years from now, we're going to be looking back like, remember, he wasn't nothing. I mean, Gonzaga was a one seed over there, frauds, but.
See,
so
now, Jim, you know what my argument used to be. And the only thing that, would probably change that is because VCU is supposed to join the Big East. You know what I'm saying? So if they do get into a bigger conference, then some of the stuff I'm saying, I could possibly change my opinion on that. But if they were to stay in the conference that they're in, I don't really think it matters how much – Shaka Smart, how good he is and how good he can recruit. There's just certain places that top-line recruits aren't going to go. But, being as though they may be joining the Big East, that could change the whole. That could change the whole. I mean, it's level now, but let's say if it shakes back out the way that it usually is, the big conferences are still going to get
I think as long as that rule of one and done is there, I don't think it will ever shake that kind. I think the landscape has completely changed now. It may change again because I don't know how.
I think they
want to
get rid of that rule, so they're going to, yeah.
Exactly.
That rule is going to be addressed. So
that's the thing. Whatever happens with that rule can change how I feel about this story. But as it's constituted right now, I think it's a good move to stay put. If that rule changes, everything else could change because, that's part of the reason why there is parity. I mean, I was looking at pictures of college teams, that great 30 for 30 on North Carolina State. When you look at some of those teams that played back then, you're like, yo, these college teams is ass cheeks. You talk about teams with Akil's favorite player, Ralph Sampson, Hakeem and Drexler on the same team, Michael Jordan, Sam Perkins, James Worthy on the same team. It's like you look at some of those old teams and you look at the teams now, we talking about four guards and like a big man from like off the street. It's like, so things could change, though. Things could change because they're going to have to address that rule because,
like I said, they tried to in the last collective bargaining agreement in the NBA, but I think they were like, the cliche, you got to pick your battle, so I think they left that alone. You remember I talked about the NC State job last year. I think it's a different scenario with this one because UCLA is a different monster. Even though UCLA isn't as great as they once were, people have a lot of expectations with UCLA. So I think it's a situation where he can do pretty well at UCLA, just like Ben Howland did,
And the expectations out of UCLA are so high because of their tradition that whether even if he does well, he still may not have that job for a long time. So I'm definitely not mad at him not taking that particular job. I thought the NC State job last year may have been a perfect type of scenario because, you know, you're in the ACC, you get that ACC money, you get the ACC recruiting edge, you know, with how good he's supposed to be, I think that would have mixed well. But I'm kind of glad he didn't take the UCLA job because you can do well there, but if you don't do absolutely wonderful, they're getting rid of you. So
yeah,
I think it's the smartest
decision. You might be better than North Carolina State at this point, real tough.
with all the realignments and the conferences and all that kind of stuff, it definitely is a wait-and-see situation. So this year, it may be a little different for him. He got to kind of wait to see how everything shakes out, like, you know. We joined the Big
East. And think about how far they came. They were a 5 seed this year. That's not a slouch. Like they were a 5 seed. And it, you know, so he's building it up. He's building the program the right way, man. We got Neef on the line who wants to. Let me bring Neef on real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Neef, what's going on, homie?
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing?
What up, man?
How you?
What's up, brother? How you?
I'm good. I'm good.
What's going on? What you want to talk about?
Nah, man, it's been a good tournament so far. You know, a lot of upsets. What's the Florida Gulf Coast?
Yeah.
Boys
balling.
They balling, yeah.
All right, be honest with you. Who'd you have winning before the tournament started, man?
Who I had winning it?
Yeah.
I pick Indiana.
Okay. All right,
so they're still in it. They're still in
it. Yeah, I did too. I took all chalk, though. I took all favorites.
I know some people who took Georgetown, so their winner was out.
I had Louisville in one pool, and I had Indiana in another, but I'm no expert. I was picking one seed, so, you know, it is what it is, though. What you think about the hometown teams, though, so far, like Temple and LaSalle?
Yeah, they all competed. I mean, Villanova, they got down big early, but then they second half, they came back, made it a game. North Carolina held them off, but and Temple. Now, I mean, Temple did good too.
Yeah, we were talking about that earlier. They just kind of faded down the stretch because it was a game where only one person was actually hitting shots, and there was no way you're gonna keep that going for 40 minutes against a team as good as Indiana. So they gave it their all, you know. The guys who weren't hitting shots, like Jimmy said earlier, they still did their thing in other areas like defense, rebound, and stuff like that. But they just couldn't buy a bucket, man.
If they would have let Khalif Wise just do his thing, they probably would have beat Indiana. You know what I mean? Like,
they let him do his thing.
He should have took every shot.
He said, take every shot.
But
you know what,
Dev
brought up a good point. If you're watching the second half of that game, Indiana made some adjustments in terms of how they were defending him.
Yeah,
so a lot of times he couldn't
get
the rock. And by the time he got the ball, it was like low on the shot clock. So
right.
And Indiana,
so
like, you know, to their credit, they made an adjustment on defense, and that's what good teams do. I mean, it's the reason they're a one seed, because he was giving them the business in the first half.
Yes,
sir. He had like 31, I think.
All right,
yeah,
before
he
get
finished
out of here, let me ask you a question, though. What you think about LaSalle's shot moving forward?
LaSalle, yeah, I like them moving forward. I think they can get to the Final Four. But that bracket they're in, it's kind of weak now. Wichita State, they can beat them. Ain't nobody really strong enough.
Who do they play? All right, now, if they get past Wichita State, they play the winner of what game?
I'm not sure.
I only got the matchups that are happening tonight on my screen.
Okay. Because, I mean, I think he has a point because that was that bracket where all the top seeds were, like, you know, getting knocked off.
They play the winner of Arizona and Ohio State. So if they got to play Ohio State. Yeah, Ohio State.
Arizona, Ohio State, they're not like what they were before,
you know.
Yeah, they still got them big bodies, though. But, I mean,
that's exactly, man.
It's been a good tournament, man. I'm looking forward to the ninth game, man, you know, so we can see what happens, man. Anyway, Neef, man, thanks for the call, man. We're about to, you know, talk about some other sports or whatnot, do some baseball.
All right, man,
so thanks for the call, though, bro.
Let's go LaSalle, man, Philly all day.
You already know, man. Salute, bro.
All right.
All right, it's been
a quarter. In all things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's really nothing to talk about in terms of football. If you want to see our football talk in terms of Doomerville and James Harrison, tomorrow morning we'll release a video on our YouTube channel. It's WolvenSportsTV.com. We're going to, you know, talk some football there. But, you know, we
make
have
sure you watch
time,
Field Vision every week.
Field Vision, that'll drop tomorrow morning to hear our football talk. But baseball is getting ready to start, and it crept up upon us. Me and Dev were talking the other day, and I was like, yo, open day like a month now, right? He's like, no, that's on Monday. Like,
the funny thing is, when things happen, Jimmy, we're like, we're kind of like, all right, man, when the football season or the basketball season isn't going right for your team, we're like, when do pitchers and catchers report?
Yeah,
they
don't
report it, play the whole
truth.
Spring, and the opening day is like right here. Like two,
yo,
two teams
swear,
play Sunday. It's a game Sunday
yo,
night.
I swear it was fast. But then again, baseball plays 600 games a season. So
yeah, so they got to get
know,
it started.
It is.
They got to
get
it started.
Again, for those listening in, tomorrow we'll drop a video with our football talk for the week. So check that out on our YouTube channel. But, Dev, go ahead. Let's talk some baseball.
All right. Let's get into some – let's just get right into some of our predictions. Sports Illustrated and ESPN the Magazine have both picked the Washington Nationals to win the World Series. We know what the Nats did last year, rising up to win the NL East. You know, they went out in a hard-fought playoff series. And now, you know, they're everybody's odds-on favorites to go ahead and win the whole thing. I mean, I think it was Sports Illustrated, got them winning 100 games this year on their way to winning the World Series over the Tampa Bay Rays. So let's go ahead with our predictions. We're going to pick our division winners. Our two wild cards, the championship series, and then the World Series rep and winner, you know, from both leagues. And then Jimmy's going to tell you guys who the War Room consensus award winners will be. So anybody want to be brave and volunteer to go first with their
prediction? Yeah, I get it hopping.
All right, get it hopping with your division winners and everything.
True indeed, true indeed. In the AL East, I've got the Rays. AL Central, I've got the Detroit Tigers. The West, I got the Rangers. My AL wild cards are the Yankees and the Angels.
the Angels.
The Angels. And my AL league champ will be the Detroit Tigers. In the NL, I've got the Nationals winning the East, the Reds winning the Central, the Giants winning the NL West.
West.
The Braves wild card and the Dodgers in the wild card slot. I'm going to take the Reds as my elite champ for the NL, and I'm going to go with the Tigers winning.
Joey Votto and the boys versus Cabrera and the boys, Verlander and the boys. Who you got winning the World Series?
Tigers.
The Tigres? All right, that's who I had winning last year. I had the two teams picked, and the Tigers sold me out. I could have looked like a genius.
Real quick before you go, though, I just want to say that Austin, I knew it was no way on God's green earth he's picking anything DC, yo.
He's like, can't do it, won't do it. Who did you go with in the NL East?
The NL East, I went with the Reds.
No, that's the Central.
Well, the Reds don't play in the East, so they play in the Central.
The East. No, I went with the Nats winning the East.
Oh, okay, but that's not going as far as they. All right, no, I think,
to Bryce Harper. That's my young boy.
I think it's going to be a very interesting baseball season, and especially in the AL East, because we're used to seeing the Yankees and the Red Sox be atop that division. I'm kind of going out on a limb. I don't know how much of a limb it is because, you know, I've seen some other people who weren't really picking, you know, the Yankees to dominate the division like they have. But I think the team that I have winning is you're just not used to seeing this. But I got I got the Toronto Blue Jays winning the AL East. Their pitching staff is murder with the addition of Mark Burley, Josh Johnson, and R.A. Dickey from the Mets. You know, he was last year's Cy Young winner. They got Jose Reyes, Emilio Bonifacio, and Melky Cabrera. A lot of these people they got in that and that fire sale that the Marlins had before the trade deadline last season. So I think with the with those additions, man, the pitching staff and the additions to the lineup, I think Toronto can actually make some noise this year. But the only thing is, like, these guys really couldn't put it together when they were together with the Marlins. So we're going to see if the mix that they put these guys with in Toronto makes it any better. I'm going to just go with a couple. In some of these divisions, I'll tell you who's going to be, you know, second and third, because I think the races are going to be that close. I got the Tampa Bay Rays coming in second. Of course, Madden, he's going to do a lot of mix and matching with that lineup. He actually has four players that are going to see substantial time at second base, and their biggest addition was Yunel Escobar. Ben Zobrist is still there, and we know they have Evan Longoria, but he's always hurt. He missed 85 games last year with a hamstring, so that's why it kind of makes me I'm a little reluctant to pick the Rays to win the division, but it sounds funny still to pick the Blue Jays to win. The Yankees are basically aging, ailing with injuries, people coming back from injuries, Jeter, Sandman, but they didn't reload as usual, I don't think. I think, you know, they don't even have the highest payroll this year. The Dodgers do, and that's crazy to think that the Yankees don't have the highest payroll in the league, but if they're
like
going to do anything,
do, like, we don't do business like Pop, yo. We want more of that chicken in our pocket.
Right. So if they're going to do anything this season, that pitching staff, you know, CeCe and the boys are going to have to carry them. And then I got, even though they had a great season last year, I got the Orioles and the Red Sox, you know, bringing up the rear. The AL Central, I'm going to go with the Tigers, my pick from last year. Of course, they still have the deep rotation led by Verlander and Scherzer. And then you got the hitting with Cabrera, Fielder, and they added Torii Hunter to the mix. So this team isn't much in the area of fielding, but, you know, they're deep in, with the pitching staff, and their lineup is just beastly. I got the White Sox, the Royals, the Indians, and the Twins bringing up the rear. AL West, as Austin would say, I got the Angels, Pujols, Trout, and they added Josh Hamilton to the lineup. Come on, man. Can we say talent? They lost Zach Greinke.
Winning.
So the pitching might be a little bit questionable, but I got the Angels winning that division fairly easily. The Rangers, I got them coming in second. But, of course, if Josh Hamilton is on the Angels, that means the Rangers lost Josh Hamilton. So that's, of course, their biggest blow, to lose an MVP to a division rival. So we're going to see how that goes. And then I got the A's, Mariners, and the Astros bringing up the rear. The Astros may be in a different league now, in a different division altogether, but they're still the Astros. Let's go to the NL East, where it hurts my heart to not say that the Phillies are going to win, but even amidst all of the, you know, the talent that the Washington Nationals have, I think the Braves are going to edge out this division. Chipper's gone, but they added both Upton brothers, so they have Justin Upton and B.J. Upton. The funny thing is, you know, Chipper wore number 10. The Upton brothers wear number 2 and number 8. So, you know, is that a coincidence that they're trying to live up to being Chipper? So the Upton brothers, along with Hayward, Ugla, Freddie Freeman, and the gang, and a very, very strong bullpen, I believe if the Braves with their lineup can get a lot of leads this season, I think the bullpen will be very, very instrumental in keeping leads and winning games for them. Then we go to the Nationals, who has a very deep starting rotation themselves. Strasburg, Gio Gonzalez, Jordan Zimmerman, Ross Detweiler. Talented lineup. They added Denard Spahn. They got Worth, Zimmerman, and the boy Bryce Harper, who's batting like something like .476 in spring training. Like, he's on fire. Being a fan of a team in this division, like, I like Bryce Harper a lot, but I'm going to have to hope and pray that he cools down a little bit, because I don't want him to just flat out embarrass my Phillies, who I have coming third in this division. We know the Phillies have an aging core. Rollins, Utley, and Howard, they're like 34, 34, and 33, respectively. Dom Brown is stepping back into the starting lineup, and, you know, that's kind of shaky. We're not sure what he's going to do. They added Michael Young, Ben Revere. They still have the strong names at pitching, but Roy Halladay has been struggling as of late. He even struggled today.
Man,
in the last.
His fastball is dive on this, yo.
His fastball is a slow ball. He struggled in a spring training game today, gave up something like 8 hits. Cole Hamels is moving into the opening day starter. They're going to go day two with Cliff Lee. So that's still a strong, you know, pitching staff. If Roy Halladay is going to be your third pitcher, like, that's crazy. So he has
to
get
it together. Not that slow to Brent. Brent said it's fast enough for him.
No, actually, Brent came to me the other day and was like, yo, I hate to admit this, but Halladay
man
is
falling
done.
Off.
And then, yeah. And then he blamed everybody in the organization for it. He said they wasted all his great years. So he went in on the whole team. It was everybody's fault, but Halladay.
Right, and then the Central, I'm like, Austin, I got Joey Votto and the Reds winning the Central with the Cards, Pirates, Brewers, and Cubs bringing up the rear. And then we go to the NL West, where I have the Los Angeles Dodgers with the $220 million payroll, higher than the New York Yankees. They added Zach Greinke. Of course, last year in that, you know, the deal with the Red Sox, they picked up Adrian Gonzalez, Carl Crawford. They got Hanley Ramirez now. Of course, they still have Matt Kemp and the pitching with Greinke, Kershaw, and Beckett is a pretty good starting staff as well. The Dodgers have all the talent in the world. They have all the payroll in the world to actually get it done this year. So we'll see what they're actually going to end up doing. But I have them winning the NL West. Then I got the Giants. You know, they retained a few of their people, Scudero, Angel Pagan, and, of course, the starting pitching, which is usually their saving grace. Then I got the Diamondbacks, the Padres, and the Rockies bringing up the rear. And the AL, my wild cards would be the Rays and the Rangers. In the NL, the wild cards will be the Nationals. And, man, I want so bad to say the Phillies, but it's going to be the Nationals and the Giants. I think in the ALCS, you will see the Detroit Tigers face off against, I'm going to say the Rays, even though I had the Blue Jays winning the division. I think, you know, I'm going to say the Rays will be in the ACL, the ALCS, with the Tigers going back to the World Series. In the National League, I'm going to go with the Braves versus the Dodgers in the NLCS. With the Dodgers winning, World Series, Dodgers versus Tigers. I think the Tigers are going to bounce back and get their World Series this year. So I'm picking them again, second year in a row, Detroit Tigers. That's my preview. Okay. Jimmy, what do you see happening?
All right, let's go. First off, let's talk about the AL West. In the AL West, I'll give you my entire division. I have the Angels winning, the Rangers in second, A's in third, Mariners, and the Astros bringing up the rear, or as you guys call them, the Angels. In the Central, I have the Tigers, White Sox in second, Royals, Indians, and the Twins bringing up the rear. In the AL East, as I was going through this, I was sitting there thinking, like, damn, am I really going to do this? But I have the Rays and Blue Jays are going to fight it out. I think it's between those two. I have the Rays winning because, like you said, Dev, I don't know how those guys that came over to the Blue Jays, how they're going to mesh right away. I think they're going to fight for the division, but I got the Rays winning it with the Blue Jays in second. How about
hey, Jimmy,
this? I got the Orioles
watch
in third.
And then watch the Yankees just win the division again.
Yo, I was thinking the same thing. I said, watch, they're going to make a move. They're going to rob somebody blind and end up winning. But I have the Rays and Blue Jays fighting it out, but I have the Rays actually winning the division. In the NL West, I have the Dodgers winning, Giants, D-backs, Rockies, then the Padres. To the Central, I also have the Reds, but I have the Cardinals giving them a fight. They have a lot of young talent, and I think the Cardinals will definitely give the Reds a fight, but I think the Reds will prevail and win that division. But then I have the Cubs. I have the Pirates, then the Cubs, then the Brewers. I think the Pirates are going to be an okay team. They're going to shock a lot of people. But they're not going to be able to compete with the Reds and Cardinals, and I do have the Reds winning that division.
Well, they can't sneak up because they played pretty well through a lot of last year. So
they did.
They're
but
not going to be able to sneak up.
The Reds from day one, it'll be clear-cut that those two are the best teams in that division. But
right.
I think the Pirates are, you know, up-and-coming team. Anyway, the NL East, as much as it pains me to say this, I'm going to pick the Nationals. It's funny because I got in an argument the other day. You know, shout-out to my man Hip Hop Cycle. A couple of us were arguing on Twitter. And he's a Mets fan. I'm a Phillies fan. We were arguing with a Braves fan. And I was sitting there telling them, what the hell are we arguing for when the Nationals are going to win the division anyway? All three of us are talking dirty about each other's teams, and I don't think none of us will win the division. I think the Nationals will actually, you know, win the division. But, you know, I'm going to have the Phillies come in second, the Braves third. I can't pick the Braves. I think the Phillies still have a lot of talent. I think
they stay healthy, man.
That window is damn near closed. But I think
you know what the difference is, Jim? Last year, the Phillies and the Nationals had a lot of injuries. The difference being the Nationals were able to play well through their injuries, and the Phillies couldn't. You know, at the end of the year when the Phillies started getting everybody back, they started playing better baseball. They have to be able to play like a few years ago when they were so deep that they could play through anybody being hurt.
Here's what I'm hoping is going to happen. None of us picked them. None of us are really high on them. This would be the year they win. Just
exactly.
Because we all like, man, they're old. I hope they rally around that.
Trying to hear a lot of this.
Couple years.
Driven to deep left field, and this ball is out of here.
Rest in peace. Yo, it's one of those things, man, where I hope they rally around the fact that they're not the favorite anymore, because over the last several years, they have been the favorite.
Jimmy Rollins is just cocky enough to make that his motivation and go out talking trash and back it up. So
man, listen, man, I'm gonna attend a lot of games this year, man. So I'm looking forward to baseball season. But anyway, back to giving my predictions because we got a couple minutes left. I have the Nationals, then the Phillies, then the Braves, Mets, and Marlins. In terms of the wild card games, I have Toronto. I have Toronto. Who did I have them playing? I'm sorry, my NL game was the Giants and Phillies in the wild card game. And I actually have the Phillies winning, of course. Of course I'm going to pick the Phillies. I'm going to have the Blue Jays and the Yankees. I have the Yankees at third. Yeah, I have the Yankees and Blue Jays playing, with the Blue Jays winning that game. ALDS, I have the Angels and Blue Jays playing, with the Angels winning that. Devil Rays and Tigers. The Tigers in 7. And by the way, I have the Angels in 5 in the ALDS. NLDS, I have the Phillies versus the Dodgers, and I have the Dodgers beating the Phillies in 6 games. And the Nationals versus the Reds, with the Nationals winning in 5. So my ALCS, I have the Angels versus the Tigers. I have the Angels winning that in 7 games. NLDS, Dodgers versus the Nationals, the Dodgers in 6 games. And this all leads to my World Series, which is the Dodgers versus the Angels. I have an all-California World Series, and I actually have this going 7 games, and the Angels winning in 7. I just think that Mike Trout, Albert Pujols, I mean, the talent they have with their offense, man, I think they're going to find some pitching now. We know going into the season, their pitching
is
the greatest.
You see,
so I think they'll
World Series win number 3 for the Machine.
Listen, man. I absolutely do, and I think he's going to have a season that's going to be crazy. We all know how he started last year.
Right.
I think he's going to, like, you know, get into the groove, and he's going to, you know, be the old Albert Pujols, and he's going to have a great season. But in all honesty, I think the MVP is on that team, and it's not even him. Mike Trout,
yeah. Trout
has the AL MVP. Now, my NL MVP, man, this was difficult because I had a couple guys I was I'll tell you 3 people I was arguing with. Bryce Harper, Matt Kemp, and Andrew McCutchen, believe it or not, from the Pirates. So, you know, I had to pick somebody. I probably will go with Harper just based upon the success of the team. The team's going to have. But I think the Dodgers are actually going to go to the World Series, so I could say Kemp. Anyway, in terms of the Cy Young, Justin Verlander in the AL. In the NL, I have Gio Gonzalez from the Nationals, which is crazy because most people who talk about their pitching staff, you know, go right to Strasburg, but I think Gio Gonzalez is, you know, the guy to look out for in terms of the pitching.
Plus Gio on the juice, so he got an advantage.
You know what I mean? You know,
juicy,
but Hey, yo, Rookie of the Year. Now I'm really drawn with this because I was doing a lot of research because I love baseball. I have Jerickson Profar from the Rangers and Jarrett Cole from Pittsburgh. And I know people were like, who the hell is he talking about? These are really irrelevant awards, but I would throw it out there anyway. In terms of the managers of the year, I have John Farrell winning the AL Manager of the Year. And the NL Manager of the Year was, I had a couple. I was looking at Kirk Gibson. I'm sorry. You know who I'm talking about, B. Austin?
Yeah.
No, that was for the rookie.
I thought you said something. Excuse me.
Yeah,
but
because you know I don't know nothing about baseball.
I mean, yeah, this is true. I know I'm drawn with some of these awards, y'all, but at the end of the day, I'm excited about baseball, man. And I think that the divisions that Deb was talking about, like with the Blue Jays and Rays, I think it's going to be very exciting to see, like, the Red Sox and Yankees. They're going to be bottom feeders, in my opinion. So it's going to be crazy to see, like, a change of the guard, so to speak, in their division. I know Dev's very high on the Blue Jays, and I'm high on the Rays, and I hate saying that because they're in Tampa, but it is what it is.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a very, very interesting season, man. Because, I mean, at least from what we're predicting, what some other people are predicting, you know, like you said, teams like the Yankees, the Red Sox, it may be time for a little bit of a fall off. But, you know, the season hasn't started yet, so we don't know how they're thinking and how they're going to come out actually not being the favorites. You know, they may come out and surprise everybody. So, you know, how the Nationals were supposed to be they were supposed to be improved last year, but they weren't supposed to come out and win that many games and actually win the NL East. So the Yankees might say the same, like, look, y'all not picking us? That's cool.
The thing about the Yankees is I look at the Yankees and I don't know if it's just me or is it something to the fact that the Suns are like, yo, they just don't do business like their father did.
Right.
They're not just going to open the wild up and just go crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to quote it because I actually forgot the year, but this is the first time in a very long time that the Yankees don't even have the highest payroll in the league. I mean, not that, you know, they still don't have one of the tops, but it's when is the last time you could even fathom thinking somebody would have a higher payroll than the Lakers? But, you know, the Lakers.
You mean the Yankees.
The Yankees. But the Dodgers are like the Yankees
I'm
West.
I'm also anxious to see how Mariano comes back.
Jeter. As I said, they're eating and they're ailing. It's cool. It's a different story, like, when young guys are hurt and they come back, but their older guys are hurt and trying to come back off of injuries, you know. Mariano's already said he's going to retire at the end of the season. So we're going to see if he can even make it to the end of the season after,
Mariano basically came back because he didn't want the last image of himself being, you know, kind of carted off. Not
falling
because.
Off while shagging a fly ball in a warm-up. Yeah, I wouldn't want that either, so.
Yeah, and the crazy part is, man, it's you look like you just said that they're old. They don't have the highest payroll. It's crazy to think that we're talking about baseball. It's like we're all just writing off the Yankees, but.
Yeah, that's why I think, like, we're going to say all this, and then they're going to come out and dominate the AL East once again.
Yeah, we got to get off the line. As a matter of fact, we have a call on the line. We only have a couple seconds, but 231, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, what's going on? What you want to talk about? We got a couple seconds before we have to go.
All right, with the off-season acquisitions the Cubs picked up, how do you think they're going to do this year?
I think the Cubs will improve, but I don't think it'll be enough to win the division or anything like that. I still have the Reds winning that division. What about you, Jim?
Yeah, I have the Reds winning the division and the Cardinals also. I had the Cubs competing, but they're in a tough division because even the Pirates are tough. So I think the Cubs are making the right moves, but I don't think they're ready yet because I think the Reds as well as the Cardinals and possibly the Pirates might be better as well. So. In that third spot, it could be the Cubs or the Pirates. Neither one would shock me, but I definitely think that the Reds and Cardinals are head and shoulders better. But it's a long season. And moves
make sure you call in next week, and we'll talk about it a little more. Call in a little earlier because we're about to get off the air now.
All right, that sounds like a good idea. All right.
All right,
thanks
for the call, man.
Thanks for the call.
Time for us to get
out of here.
That's right. By the time we talk to you again, baseball season will have started. Thanks for joining us in the war room today, good people. Shout out to everybody in the chat room, those who chimed in Facebook, Twitter, those that called in. Tune in the same time. next week, because we'll be right here to talk about the Final Four and much more. Baseball, like I said, baseball hasn't started. College basketball is almost over at that point. Make sure you check out tonight's game. Check us out all online, Facebook, Twitter. Don't forget, check out WarroomSportsTV.com. We drop content on a daily basis. Until next time, everybody, don't accept mediocrity and be steadfast in the war against ignorance. In the words of the great Chris Wallace, I see you chumps on top.
All the blueprint.
Yo.
Every Thursday, 6 to 8, they do this. Shout out to Dez, PJ, B-Austin, Doc Bay on replay. WarroomSports.com. Get that mobile app. If not, dial.
Call it
323-0012. If you're going and you sensitive, then oh well.
Yeah.
Physical podcast, let's talk sports. Showtime like magic in the block push.
Magic.
Listen live, push one to join in. Rip your team or listen for your enjoyment. Hip-hop dollars, pit stop and knowledge. Should be in sports credits, I ain't talking college. Five guys, no beef though. Corporate secrets, but the streets know. Belafonte, I got a G-flow. KC, royalty, I'm in beast mode. 2 hours, get your game up. Who's the best in sports cast? You better name us. War Room Sports.
War Room Sports, www.warroomsports.com. What? Ain't no more to it.